So this is Space Kate, and I've come down to the tweet-up, the first ESA and DLR space tweet-up ever. This is very exciting. I've just been on the Sophia plane and heard a little bit about that. I did an interview, which you can hear if you look at audioboo.fm/spacekate, which is where you are already if you're listening to this, probably. So check that out for a bit of the basics, but I've now come into a tent where we're sheltering from the rain here, and I've got Dr. Smith from NASA Ames, that's over in California. I've actually visited them. And you've actually worked with the Sophia. And if, in case they don't know what Sophia is, in a sentence?
Sophia is an airborne observatory. So we took a 747, we cut a big hole in the side and put a telescope in the back. And people look at us a little bit funny, but the main idea of Sophia is to combine elements of ground-based astronomy and space-based astronomy. And the cool thing about ground-based astronomy is you're very flexible. You can change out instruments, you can upgrade things, you can fix it if you break it. But the cool thing about space is that you get out of the Earth's atmosphere, and so you have access to wavelengths that you don't generally have access to. So Sophia combines those two regimes into something that's kind of the best of both worlds. So we can we take off every night from Palmdale, and we land at the end of a flight. So we can change out instruments, we can change out cameras. We have seven instruments that will eventually go on to Sophia in our first generation. We're putting out a call for second generation instruments in the U.S. And so so we can continually upgrade. But the cool thing is we fly above most of the water vapor in the Earth's atmosphere, and that gives us access to wavelengths in the infrared regime that we don't have access to on the ground. So, for instance, I look at dust production around evolved stars, so stars that have run out of their nuclear fuel at the center, and they kind of puff out their outer layers. And as they're doing that, they create sort of this candle soot-like stuff that are rings of benzene, but in huge conglomerations. And this gives off light in the infrared. But a lot of that light is blocked by the water vapor in the Earth's atmosphere, even at the ground. So while I can kind of see what I'm looking for if I go to a ground-based observatory like Keck, it's much better when I go onto Sophia and get above the water vapor. So that's the reason that we want to do Sophia. And so I actually came into the project as a graduate student at UCLA. I worked on a project called called FlightCam. And that camera goes from 1 to 5 microns, just right of what your eye can see. And so that camera is actually going to go on to Sophia next sometime in October. And so we're hoping to do some new observations with FlightCam. Currently, the GREAT instrument, which is a German heterodyne instrument, is on the aircraft. And GREAT actually looks at things that are really, really, really far into the infrared, almost to the microwave regime. And the reason that you want to look at these wavelengths is to look at big molecular clouds. So what astronomers consider to be very, very cool clouds of dust. And we think those clouds actually eventually start to collapse into star-forming regions, is where stars are born. So we want to be able to look at those clouds just as they start to collapse. To do that, you need something that looks at very, very long infrared wavelengths, such as the GREAT instrument.
So the kind of things that you're looking at, I mean, how far away are they? Or does it vary? I mean, do you have like a certain distance that you can see clearly, and then after that, you know, I don't know. I'm just wondering, what do you actually see?
Well, most of the stuff that Sophia looks at is inside of our own galaxy, and so, of course, that still means we're talking about, hundreds, if not thousands, of light years away from us. And so, to give a sense of scale, the closest star to us is 4 light years away. And so, if we're talking about something that's 100 or 1,000 light years away, it just gives an idea of just how big the galaxy is. We can look at things that are outside of our galaxy. That's generally not what we do most of the time with Sophia, but we will look at other galaxies. We'll look at Andromeda, or especially if we get to go to the southern hemisphere, or we'll look at M81 and other things that are outside of our own galaxy. But for the most part, we're looking at dust and gas and star formation. We're also going to be looking at things inside of our own solar system. So Kuiper Belt objects, asteroids. We just did a measurement of Pluto, actually, just recently by flying as Pluto came in front of a star. We can actually measure the atmosphere of Pluto by looking at the shadow of Pluto. And so that's something that Sophia can do better than pretty much anything in the world, because it can go literally any place on the Earth. And so that was a really cool experiment, and it worked very, very well.
Okay, so you fly at night, obviously, that would make sense. Talk me through it. You know, you, I mean, I've flown around the world doing various things, chasing NASA and space shuttles, and now coming over here for the tweet up. But I'm guessing you don't sort of go through security, check your bags, and get on the plane. So just talk me through very basically what I mean, how long are you up there for one, and what's your average, your day's work, day, night's work like?
So it's a fairly long day. Usually the flights are about 9 hours. But before that, we have a crew brief. And so that crew brief is just, we go through what safety precautions we need to take, make sure everybody's on the same page, make sure everybody knows who's on the airplane. And then we go out to the plane. It's usually sitting out on the tarmac. And there's usually about an hour between when we have our crew brief and when we actually take off. We also have another briefing because it's a little different being on Sophia. We don't have, for instance, the seats with the oxygen masks that drop down. So we actually carry our own little baggie with emergency breathing things. So that's kind of cool. All the seats have a lot of legroom because it's not a full coach cabin. But the coolest thing about it is that you're actually flying backwards. So the telescope is in the back of the plane. And so you're usually looking towards the back of the plane, whereas the plane is obviously going forwards. So in some ways, you feel like you're flying backwards because, you know, what you're looking at is you know, the opposite direction of your direction of flight. I was actually on one flight with Great that there were a lot of thunderstorms across the Midwest. And we actually got some warning from air traffic control, and they said that it was pretty bumpy. And because the telescope is on this big oil bearing, the telescope stays nice and fixed. And so it's funny to think about it because you're sitting on this aircraft and you're seeing the telescope bounce around, but really it's you bouncing around the telescope. So I think one of the things we wanted to do was put a camera on the back of the one of the instruments and see us all bouncing around, you know, and see what the telescope is seeing us do. But it's pretty intense because, you know, you're doing astrophysics during this. And so it's actually very similar to whenever you're at an observatory. So
so you're flying backwards doing astrophysics.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. So, but we have a telescope operator, and we have fantastic telescope operators. So if you can imagine, trying to find a specific star on the night sky is hard enough from the ground. But when the ground is moving as well, that's pretty intense. And so so we have very carefully laid out flight plans. These flight plans take several iterations, several weeks to come up with, because we have to be heading in the correct direction at the correct speed in order to look at what we want to look at. So we have our telescope operator set up on the star, and then we actually take our instrument and we place the star where we want it in our field of view, and we start taking images. And so some of the cameras actually do things called scanning, so they move across the sky at a constant rate. Some people do dithers, which is you take a picture at various locations and then you can sort of put them together into one big really well done image. And then flight cam will do spectroscopy, so that's just looking at the spectrum of the light, so just spreading it out into sort of its rainbow to look for the fingerprints of various atoms and molecules and dust. So
when you say images, I'm going to be stupid here, but you do actually mean proper bona fide images that you could. So I mean, can you see those on the plane yourself? You don't have to take them down to the chemist and get them. Wait for a week for them to come back or anything.
It can depend on the instrument. So flight cam, you see images immediately. With Great, it takes some processing. So Great is basically a single pixel instrument. So it's just taking one measurement on the sky at the time. So by scanning, they can build up an image in one wavelength. And so it takes a little bit of processing for Great. Of course, if you're taking spectra of things, you're taking images of the rainbow from something, but you're not actually taking a picture of the thing that you'd be able to recognize. But the telescope operators can actually see with the guide cameras what the star field looks like. And so that's how we keep the telescope pointed at the correct image. That's how we take out any of the jiggle of the telescope or the plane and that sort of thing.
So, wow, that's pretty cool. So what next for Sophia and what next for you?
So we're going to do some calibration flights where we're going to put two new instruments on. We call it the Flippo configuration. So this is flight cam and an optical instrument called Hippo. And we can actually mount those two instruments at the same time. And so it's the only combination that we can do that with. They were designed to be able to do that. And so we'll actually fly with two instruments at the same time. And that's partially to do some really cool science. It's also partially to maybe make them available for the next observing call for astronomers to use. But the main goal of this is to actually characterize our telescope. And so how much does it move? How good is the throughput? What's the emissivity? All these very important things we need to know before that'll help the astronomical community apply for time and know when SOFIA is going to be useful for them. And so that's the next big thing for SOFIA. Of course, we're going to do science on our way back from Germany. And so that'll be really cool. I know the great team is looking forward to that. And then they have two more flights before that. And then after that, we actually are going to do a big avionics upgrade for the airplane. So it's still a vintage cockpit right now. And so we're going to upgrade it so that we can have 20 years of SOFIA going on into the future.
Sounds great. Thanks for taking the time to talk to me. Great.